I'm Samantha Brown. You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast, curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Up now, another piece from Stories from the Heart of the Land, a new public radio series which considers the connection between people and the natural world. This piece is from the series' second hour, called The Nature of the Imagination, the nature that exists in our mind's eye, connections to the natural world we feel we have, places we feel we know, even though we've never been there. Here's series host Jay Allison.
We start at the top, the North Pole. For thousands of years, people imagined what might be up there. Some thought it would be a giant magnet. Others predicted a tropical paradise, and a few, who were scoffed at, suggested a sea of ice. Over three centuries, more than 600 explorers died trying to reach it. Those who made it, or said they did, like Frederick Cook in 1909, found a landscape they said was more surreal than wonderful.
No light, no land. We were the only pulsating creatures in a dead world of ice.
Cook's nemesis, Admiral Robert Perry, claimed to have reached the same spot first. Looking around for some sort of peak, he climbed a mound of ice with his five assistants, took a photograph, and declared the final chapter of exploration ended.
Here is the cap and climax, the finish, the closing of the book on 400 years of history.
But Perry was wrong. Polar exploration was far from over. It's still a destination for people with large imaginations, and it lives in the imagination for the rest of us. Elizabeth Arnold has been to the pole before, 8 years ago, and when another opportunity came up, she said sure. Well, sort of.
I swore I'd never go back. I remember walking circles around my tent and crying myself to sleep in the cold and the my eyelashes freezing together. But here I am. I'm getting ready to get on a Russian plane headed for the North Pole. And I'm a little nervous.
We fly for hours above a continent-sized jigsaw of fractured ice. Splinters of open leaves reveal the blackness of the Arctic Ocean below. We're told the makeshift runway on the ice where we're headed is cracked. No one's sure what'll happen when we land. But it holds, and we arrive at Camp Borneo, about 60 miles from the pole.
And it's this really strange, temporary floating ice camp. A couple of big blue tents, and a bunch of vodka-drinking Russians.
Like Viktor Boryatsky, who's crossed Antarctica by dog sled and skied the pole too many times to count. He presides over Borneo. His concerns today include the cracked runway, two tents that need to be moved due to shifting ice, and a bulldozer which went through the ice trying to clear the new runway. But he says there's no place he'd rather be because it's always changing and it's never the same.
North Pole different. North Pole the same. Hundreds of miles around the same.
Boryatsky says because there's no landmark, the North Pole has to be inside you. His friend Jean-Louis Etienne, an elderly Frenchman, agrees.
You feel like you are at home and you have a place on Earth where you feel strong, where you feel as it's your identity, that you feel as a part of yourself.
I wasn't feeling strong just yet. I was just trying not to feel cold.
I've got everything I brought on, everything. Seven pairs of socks, and I have more down than a flock of ducks. Anyway, I'm standing in these big boots that are rated 140 degrees below. It's probably about 40 below right now. My feet are cold.
But I had the same boots on as Borge Ausland, who I met on the way up. He's the first man to reach the North Pole alone, totally unsupported. He's since done it in winter, in complete darkness.
It's a mental thing. It's the mental thing of standing on the top of the world. When I'm up there, I feel small, and I think it's good to feel small. We can build skyscrapers or we can go to the space, but nothing can beat nature. trip to the pole is just a kind of meditation for me. It's a philosophy.
This is only my second trip, so I'm not exactly philosophical at this point. In fact, I'm more focused on whether I'm even going to make it. And that sort of triggers this weird sense of survival that I've been having. Like I'm hungry for things I normally wouldn't eat. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I saw this chocolate bar. And I took it. It wasn't mine. You know, I don't even like chocolate. After a couple more days there in camp, the weather got better enough to get us closer. And on the way, we stopped to resupply these two explorers who'd been on the ice for 2 months.
The Grumpels for Greenland.
Len Hubert and Dixie Danziker. And the day before, they'd reached the pole from the northern coast of Siberia. And then they were headed to Greenland for another 2 months on the ice.
Every gram is too much. Don't want it.
The Dixie's carefully packing his sled, meticulously, one thing at a time.
Hey, look at this!
He's joking as Alain.
What a chaos.
He's hastily throwing his stuff into his sled.
Different personalities.
Dixie's been to the pole before, but even so.
The whole thing was just bad, bad, bad. Headwinds, a maze of open water and leads. And you really have to work hard to get to that mythical place, which is so volatile. Because as soon as you get there, you're already gone.
Yeah.
With the wind. And
okay, well, today's North Pole Day. So now it's my turn. And my expedition isn't nearly as arduous as theirs.
There's some waxable skis in
okay. Here. My sled is a lot lighter.
It's pretty obvious where to go and where not to go, right?
Yeah.
But out there, other than my own breathing, it's utterly quiet.
There's a complete and total absence of life. There's no birds, there's no animals, there's no trees. It's just snow and ice. And maybe that's what makes it feel so still.
I walked and skied for hours.
There's something a little unnerving about the scale. You know, I just feel really small. You know, that's people say that about being in the mountains. But I mean, this is really small and vulnerable. See, this is really not good ice right here. Make myself as light as possible.
And, you know, you're alone on the ice.
Something a little unnerving when you take a step and these little tiny cracks shoot out.
I remember being cold, but I was also really just happy.
My brain is working a lot faster than my hands are.
The ice and the sky were the same shade of white.
I can't see a thing.
It was completely flat in all directions. And the horizon is defined only by the blueness of the snow drifts, this wind sculpted like meringue. Other than that, everything's white.
Okay. Well, I'm standing at the North Pole. Who gets to say that? I'm in the company of dead men with big dreams and extreme adventurers and scientists and complete and total wackos. I am standing right now at the North Pole. The North Pole. Let's see, make sure here. Still right on this spot. That's what the GPS says. 90 degrees. So, this is right this minute, for this very minute anyway, really the top of the world. Okay, well, if I move in any direction, even just a step, I'll be heading south.
That's the thing about it. You're never at the pole for very long. You can't be.
It's hard to imagine, but the ice I'm standing on is moving 4 feet a second or more. And so just in the time that it took me to say what I've said so far, let's see, look at my GPS. The pole's moved, so I'm not at the pole. I've got to over here. Yeah, and it's not that the pole has moved, it's that the ice that I'm standing on has moved. And sometimes you can actually see it as these cracks, these tiny little cracks appear. And then they open into the Arctic Ocean, which is only a few feet below where I'm standing.
And that's pretty hard to forget, because one minute you're there, walking along on top of the ice. And the next, you've fallen through. Legs and feet, you're soaking wet, and it's 40 below.
If anything goes wrong, I mean, nobody can help me. It's like all of a sudden you're in a swimming pool, and you look around, and there's no edge to swim to hang on. Now, that's the sense that you get when you're here, is that it's this feeling that you're not supposed to be here. Somebody said it's a place that wants you dead. That's a little melodramatic, but you got to be careful. And nature doesn't want you here, and the ice doesn't want you here, and your mom doesn't want you here. So why are you here? I don't know, maybe that's part of the pull. You know, maybe you come to defy it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, slight fade.
Oh, my God.
Yes!
These days, of course, with a lot of money, and some cold weather experience, you can get to 90 degrees north pretty easily. Even Borge Auslan, the guy who called the pole a meditation, he's now guiding short trips to pay for his own expeditions, and there he was hitting a golf ball with his clients, who had given up trying to ski there after a couple of days and were airlifted.
Hey, Leslie and Christian, it's Neil, it's Dad, and I'm calling you from the North Pole. Made it here, and heading
yeah,
back.
Yeah, the cell phone call and the golf.
When I can or when I get email service.
Surprisingly, okay. It didn't take away at all from what I had done to get there.
Okay, I can't feel my face anymore, and I can't feel my feet, so I think my time to get right on top of it again.
You know, I wasn't a first. I wasn't the first to do anything or be anything at the pole. And yet for me, you have the same urge and you've done the same thing that so many other sort of crazy people, for their own reasons, have been there and probably thought some of the same things that you're thinking. So there's a connection. And that was enough.
I'm standing on the North Pole. Stand here much longer because I gotta move, otherwise we'll be standing in this spot for a long time. I just wanna kinda savor this.
Elizabeth Arnold lives at 61 degrees north in Anchorage, Alaska. Elizabeth's story comes from our series Stories from the Heart of the Land, produced by Atlantic Public Media. This podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. Find out more on the podcast and the series at nature.org/stories. Bill Frizzell composed and performed our music. Join me next week when we hear from those who get their dose of nature through their TV. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.